K-H-U-R-1-0. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM, Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. The COVID-19 National Public Health Emergency ended today, but it was during the pandemic that we were able to see, close up, the heroism, the dedication, and struggles of the men and women known as nurses. Well, this is National Nurses Week, and tonight we honor the work, the sacrifice, and the strength of these medical professionals. My guests are Kenyatta Hazelwood, a registered nurse with the Department of Surgery, Division of Trauma, and Critical Care at Howard University Hospital, Meedy Bardinelli, founder and president of the Black Nurse Collaborative, and Dr. Eugenia T. Powell, vice president of the Black Nurse Collaborative. If you have a comment, if you have a question, if you want to thank your nurses, lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As always, you can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Ladies, thank you so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I feel so safe. If anything happens to me, if I get a cough, if I get a scratch.
We got you,
Harold. You got, that's right.
We got you.
You are safe and secure. This is the safest you've ever been.
And I have insurance. So always important.
And we won't even charge you.
There you go. Again, thank you so much for coming in. I have so much to talk about when it comes to nurses. I really appreciate nurses. I love them. My grandmother was a registered nurse in the old St. Elizabeth Hospital days in Southeast D.C. But I wanted to ask each of you, and I'll start with Kenyatta. When you think about what a nurse is, what is your own definition?
That's such a great question. Thank you, Harold. Thank you for having us.
Sure.
And I am so grateful to be here to talk to the listeners about nurses. When I think about what a nurse is, that's such a loaded question. But for me, a nurse has to have certain characteristics. A nurse has to be compassionate and caring. A nurse has to be competent. A nurse has to always advocate for their patient. So they have to have a spirit of advocacy. They are endearing and also a little stern, right?
That part.
You have to make sure that your patients are doing the right things. You have to be able to be a multitasker, right? Because you're managing not only the patient, but you're managing the patient's family, you're managing medications, you're managing administrative concerns. And so a nurse is all of that in one.
What would you say, Meedy?
Great question. To kind of add value to what my sister Kenyatta has shared is we are surrogate family members, Harold. We are there holding your hand from the point of birth. We're there when people are passing away. We are, I think the biggest thing, and Kenyatta already alluded to that, was we're advocates. We are educators. Sometimes we're the social worker. We're the therapist. We are the interpreters for the physician. We are case managers. We are the pharmacist because we also have to explain the medications and why you're taking them and the side effects. We are truly about the business of caring. And so when you think of a nurse, long gone are the days of just the white hat and the white dresses pressed hard and the white shoes and being our physician colleagues' handmaidens. We're really not. We truly are our own area of expertise. We are professionals. The key word that Kenyatta also had already said is we're competent. So we are in our own right healthcare providers, not just nurses, we're providers. So you have advanced practice nurses that practice independently to make sure that the care of the individuals that we've been blessed to have the honor to care for. The last thing I would say to that is we are the holder of trust. People give nurses blind trust. as you just alluded to, if something were to happen to you, God forbid, you're trusting that Kenyatta and Eugenia and myself are competent. You're trusting that we're going to do the right thing for you. You don't really know that. You can't verify or validate that. But what you do know is that nursing has been the most trusted profession for the last 20 plus years from all the Gallup polls, et cetera. So we are truly the holders of blind trust for the community. We are there to provide care, comfort, and competent, safe quality care for our individuals that we care for.
Hard act to follow, Eugenia.
It is. And my two sisters here shared almost everything that I was going to say. Nurses are indeed very special. We give everything of ourselves to our patients. At the end of the day, many times nurses will go home feeling as if they are defeated, like they did not get to everything that was on the list to be done. They probably did not, but that is because they feel so obligated to their patients. And to what Meedy said, I mean, we are so trusted. Many, we give IVs. They don't know what's in that IV bag, but they trust that we're giving them the right medication through that IV bag or through that syringe. And so I think they believe in us. We are communicators. Nurses are leaders. Nurses are definitely coordinators of care. And so when you look at how when a patient comes in and what happens during that stay, it's usually the nurse that's coordinating what's happening during that stay. So we are a variety of hats, do a variety of things, and all of it is just for our patients, and we love our patients. We want to see them have good outcomes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that I've noticed with nurses, and they seem to all have this particular personality trait that you don't...
Watch out, Mr.
Right.
Watch out. Not right now. No, watch out.
And I say that, you know, I say this and it sounds like a loaded statement, but I'm very sincere about this through my hospital stays over the years, through the hospital stays of, you know, my late parents that I lost, you know, last year. Sorry. That one of the things that I've always noticed is that they must be good conversationalists.
Absolutely.
Indeed.
Because because a lot of times, when you are in a hospital or in a healthcare facility, you really are there by yourself.
And that's listeners. Right. And let me just add, that's a very good point. And to the extent we're able to get information from our patients, the better the care. Mm. So we want our patients to talk to us. We want them to say, hey, you know what, I have a daughter at home that I need to really get home to because she's alone. We want to know those things because that helps put the patient at ease a little bit, just understanding their background, understanding who they are, understanding what they prefer. So we have to be good conversationalists. We have to be good communicators. We're educators. We teach them about a lot of things. And so we just want to make sure that we have that level of dialogue with our patients.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about nurses. This is National Nurses Week. We are honoring other nurses. If you have a comment or a question, an experience you want to share with us about that you've had with a nurse, I invite you to give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. As I said in the beginning, the pandemic changed all of us in one way, shape, or form, in small and large ways. Kenyatta, talk to me about how you believe that it has changed you as a nursing professional, good ways, bad ways?
Oh my goodness, in both ways. The pandemic helped us to realize that we're more resourceful than we ever knew, right? We understand that while we might not have had the physical resources, which many of us did, but some that didn't, we had, as you already alluded to, conversation. When you are holding someone's hand and they may be on their way out, right? You are able to tap into your ability to calm them. We really tapped into that ability. We tapped into our ability to work together as a team. We tapped into our ability to lift each other up. because mm-hmm. nursing in itself is very difficult. Mm-hmm. No matter what, where you work, right? Whether you work in an insurance company or acute care setting, for me in trauma, I had to make sure that our nurses were not suffering from compassion fatigue and from burnout. And that was happening. And to lend my voice to them to help them so that they wouldn't do that, or that they give them strategies to help them do better. That's part. I learned how to do that better. Mm-hmm. Those are some of the good things I took away from the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, we looked at how racism affected the pandemic. And as a Black nurse, what that did for Black patients and what that did for a whole community. And we were able to step in and help our patients who were suffering with less than. And we were able to do that. So, you know, it really opened my eyes to our healthcare.
You know, Meadie, one of the things we all, as I said, we all had an opportunity to see. We saw nurses in a different light. We saw that they were not just supermen and superwomen, but we also saw them with their human flaws. How did you come out of the pandemic? How was your mental health, your physical health? Did it give you new insight or a new view of the profession?
Wow. The first thing that I would say and share as a point of vulnerability for all of your listeners, that I have a therapist. I want people to know, whether you know me personally, professionally, it is important to value, which is one thing to answer your question, your mental health. And so it doesn't matter what it is, just like you go to your dentist twice a year, you should go to your primary care once a year, ladies should get that mammogram once a year. You should have someone that you check in to make sure your mental space is good. And so I implore everyone to know that for me, it was very stressful. I was learning to lead and manage and survive a pandemic myself. So not only was I trying to survive, I have a husband, shout out to Tony and my son Anthony. I was scared, Harold, quite mm-hmm. frankly, coming home every day. I literally stripped at my front door, mm-hmm. Had my shoes sprayed with Lysol, did not hug, kiss, touch them till I went and showered, brushed my teeth, washed my face, and then sanitized my hand for the 50th time that day. And so for me, that's what I've learned, the value of self-care and the value of mental health. What I also learned is the importance of community, and I learned more so, and this is truly not a political statement, but I must say that what I really took away from this, Harold, is that the messenger sometimes is more important than the message. Because what we all learned during COVID, even us as healthcare providers, every day things were changing. One day you do this, one thing you get tested, we didn't have test results. One day it's you get the vaccine, one day you may not be able to get it, one day, you know, we're all listening, hanging on to every word of Dr. Fauci, but then you had other people saying contradictory information. And so for me, what I've learned and what I think the importance of the Black nurse is that for all nurses, not just Black nurses, but we are the voice of healthcare, and we have to make sure that we value that, and that we value that we have a unique space to make sure the message is one of trust, is one of evidence-based practice, and so that we ultimately want the best for the patients that we're caring for.
I've got a lot of questions and much more conversation as we honor nurses on National Nurses Week. Also, Chanel calling from D.C., Mocha calling from D.C. Stay on the line. You will be able to hear the program. We're going to be taking your calls next. And I'm going to ask the question that everyone wants to know since the beginning of time with nurses. Why are your hands so cold? We will talk about that in a bit. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. This is National Nurses Week, and tonight we honor the work and the sacrifice and the strength of these medical professionals. My guests are Kenyatta Hazelwood, a registered nurse with the Department of Surgery, Division of Trauma and Critical Care at Howard University Hospital, Meedy Bottinelli. She's the founder and president of the Black Nurse Collaborative, and Dr. Eugenia T. Powell, Vice President of the Black Nurse Collaborative. Lines are open. Give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Definitely want to get to your phone calls in just a bit. And I joked, you know, a little bit about this, but Eugenia, I will ask you, what is the deal with the cold hands?
Well, you know, we wash our hands all the time, thankfully, because, you know, we are taught, though, that, you know, spread of infection and germs, that's so critical. So we wash our hands constantly. And so I think that's probably one of the reasons why when we come into your and come into the patient's rooms, our hands are so cold, but our hearts are so warm.
Cold hands, warm hearts.
Wow. Yeah. So that's it. I mean, duh. But why did I think about that? You know, because anytime I was in the hospital, I'm like, oh, here she comes with those cold hands.
And because we have to touch people, right?
Yes,
right.
That's
part of what we do. The first thing we do when we go in a patient's room usually is touch them, yep, which is
the
something
power
we
touch.
Couldn't
assessment.
Do in a COVID.
Yes.
And if you're not touching your patient, and I think that translates to even to my personal life, mm-hmm. I want to touch someone. The first time I'm putting my hands on them, and it gives me comfort. It gives me a connection with them. So
absolutely.
Let me go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Chanel calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you, Harold. You have nursing royalty with Nurse Meedy in there. So.
Hey, I'm Chanel.
Glad. Hey, Nurse Meedy. I always listen, but I had to call in because I have a question. We see data that shows less and less African Americans are going to, especially men, are going to medical school. But we know that African Americans who have African American doctors have better outcomes. So are nurses filling that gap? Because it's a reason for concern.
You know, Chanel, I will just quickly say this. We had a summit, the BNC, this past Sunday. There's plenty of information out there. I know time is limited on this show. To your point, when a African American or Black or Brown individual is cared for a team of other Black and Brown individuals, yes, you are correct. Their outcomes tend to be much significantly higher than others. What I will share is I can't really say that Black nurses specifically are filling the gap, because in that conversation, shout out to Dr. Katie Boston Leary, she told us on Sunday the math is not mathing. So Chanel and Harold, I'll tell you one quick fact. There's 4.3 million RNs in the U.S., and there's 338 million people, and there's only 308,000 Black nurses. We're 5 to 7% of the nursing population, and there's 47.3 million Black people, which equates for every 152 Black persons, there's one nurse. The math is not mathing. And wow. So what I would say is that there is an opportunity for us to have pipelines. There is an opportunity for us to be intentional with not just for our physician colleagues, but for more Black nurses to come into the workspace and the environment. And that is what we are seeking to do with the BNC. That is what we're seeking to do, all three of us, just in our own personal professional opportunities, is to create opportunities for more high school students that are interested, students in college that are seeking to possibly change majors. We have to do that. So I'm grateful that all three of us, shout out, are all Howard University grads. And so all of us had our training right here, here in the hollow stations at WHUR today. So I think HBCUs has a very unique opportunity as well to increase that number of what I just shared.
Mm-hmm. I think it's really interesting, Meedy, that you mentioned pipeline, because I do think that we have an obligation to really look at the pipeline for mm-hmm. registered nurses, for black nurses. And that may start with LPNs and CNAs. Mm-hmm. And that when you look at in the District of Columbia, I mean, we may have one LPN program. So how is it that we are getting, individuals who would like to go into nursing, who may not be able to afford a BSN program, but get them into nursing?
It's very challenging. I need to interrupt you because you are killing me with the alphabet soup. LPN and license. CNA and the BS what?
Okay, so an LPN is a licensed practical nurse. Mm-hmm. A CNA is a certified nursing assistant. Okay. So that when you look at nursing staff, and it's not, it's a team. So it's, I'm going to sound like it's hierarchical, but it is a team. So we have CNAs. They have a set of skills, and it requires less education. You have LPNs. They can do a bit more, and they have to work under a registered nurse. And then you have the registered nurse, who's typically bachelor's prepared, but can be associate degree prepared, and perhaps even a few diploma nurses out there. And so, but everyone works well as a team. So that's the pipeline. If we can get more people involved in the CNA level, in the LPN level, who cannot afford to go to school at a BSN or in a BSN program, bachelor's program, or in a 4-year degree school, then let's get them in at the licensed practical nursing phase, and then we can create more capacity to give care, and then they have opportunities to go on to become a bachelor's degree nurse through incentives that are provided by hospitals and in other ways. So the pipeline is indeed one of the significant pieces to what we should look at in the future, just to increase the number of RNs, because you heard the data that mm-hmm. was just given.
Chanel, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mocha, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you. And good evening. Happy Mother's Day to the moms, the aunties, the very good
you.
Friends, et cetera.
Happy Mother's
Hope
Day
you guys have a great weekend. Thank you
thank
so much.
You.
This is my question. I was watching a channel broadcast here in the district. It was the congressional meeting for the results of what COVID has done, the long hauls, the shots, et cetera. There was approximately, I try to count it if I could, but I would say 50 people there, nurses, doctors, scientists, et cetera. I did not see one black representative there. I was very, very disappointed. Mm-hmm, and speaking of the pipeline, I'm not going to hold you. Speaking of the pipeline, where's the pipeline to make sure that we are represented? Mm-hmm. At these congressional level meetings.
Exactly.
That's
absolutely.
My question.
Mm.
Thank you
very much. Thank you so much, Mocha. Kenyatta, do you want to
try to
get in on that?
This is such a great conversation. So one of the organizations, additional organizations that I belong to, is an organization that has its first black nursing president this year, and I'm the second black nurse on that board of directors in its 40-year history. So when you talk about black representation, not only at the political level, but at the nursing leadership level, you're correct. It is not there. As my colleagues already mentioned, we do need a pipeline into the political space. If we do not have that, we can't affect the policy that we need to make mm-hmm, changes mm-hmm. and advocate for patients, for hospitals, and for care in general. And it's important because we come from a different space, right? To have the cultural competency represented in a political space is important for patient care. That's what the bottom line boils down to. When Meedy gave some statistics about race, patients versus nurses, it's important, especially in trauma care, when you have male black men being shot, stabbed at a higher rate than their white counterparts, but most of the nurses in the critical care setting, which are going to be your intensive care units, your trauma units, your ORs, are not people of color, nurses of color, And specifically black nurses, as we talked about.
That part.
From
the, right. That part. Let's just then, be clear. Yeah, that we need that.
We need that.
Yes.
Then it becomes somewhat harmful to our patients.
Indeed. Yeah.
I did want to talk about an issue related to that. On this program, for years, we often discuss about health disparities and being culturally competent. Mm-hmm. What role do you believe cultural competence plays, particularly when you're talking about how, black women patients, show up in doctors' offices where, we have a lot of black women who often complain that even as they try to advocate for themselves, particularly when you're talking about heart disease and breast cancer and all of these other things, that doctors that don't look like them don't hear them, and in some cases, and not until it's too late. What role does the black nurse play in that?
That to me, quite frankly, Harold, is one of the number one roles that we play, because we have a very unique position as a black nurse, because we're also a black person. And so we have a very shared experience that those patients also have. My own brother passed away from an aortic aneurysm in Pennsylvania that I believe could have been addressed had they not seen him as just a 30-year-old black man who was complaining of chest pain. He was sent home and subsequently died 3 days later from aortic aneurysm. Would that happen if he was of a different hue? Would they have given him, instead of the chest x-ray, the CAT scan or the MRI? And as Kenyatta just alluded to, not only do we have to address the social determinants of health, mm-hmm. where you work, yep. live, play, and pray, but also being in the nation's capital, what about the political determinants of health? You know, my husband, shout out to him, works for Blue Cross Blue Shield, and I would say it's important to, what are these insurance companies doing? What are they paying for, Harold? I had a point of vulnerability, needed to have a breast biopsy done as a nurse with a family history of cancer, and I was denied. But had it not been because I had an advocate, myself and my husband, we knew that I need to get this done. We did the appropriate paperwork, and we did. So ask yourself this question. I'm a college-educated HU individual. I am a professional nurse. How many other people would not have had that gumption to advocate for themselves or no? So no longer, and I implore every one of your listeners, when you go to the hospital or go to the doctor's office, if you have a PA, a physician assistant, physical therapist, a nurse, a doctor, friend, or family member, call them to make sure they help you to know what are the right questions to ask. Do not just go and accept what you hear.
Let me ask, did you say the white questions or the right questions?
The right
okay.
questions.
Okay, because that sounded like a political statement, right? No. You want to ask the right questions and the white questions.
And all of my providers, what might I add, from my dentist to my OBGYN, to my primary care, to my cardiologist, are all black providers. Mm-hmm. And when I go in there, Harold, Eugenia and I are sitting here, we've all had braids. I don't have to explain to them mm-hmm. about why I'm patting my hair. I don't have to explain to them why doing that. So black nurses take up that space where they will literally go and do those things for their patients. So, mm-hmm. That could be a whole nother session you should have us back on.
I have a question also for you, Eugenia, because mm-hmm. for people who may not really be familiar with the medical profession in any way, shape, or form, we often see in popular culture and in dramas that they're can be often tension between doctors and nurses, but how much influence do you or your nurse colleagues have over the doctors that they work
with.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
A lot.
I can't wait to hear her response.
Yeah.
Come on, Dr. Powell. Come on, Dr. Powell. Bring it, Dr. Powell.
And I'm trying to figure out where to start first.
From the beginning.
But let me just say that some of what you see is real. It mm-hmm. happens all mm-hmm. the time.
Absolutely.
Now, it does all the time. If you are, in fact, just Sunday at our summit, we had one of our founding members of the BNC, Paula Roberts, state that she was in the OR. She's a certified nursing ethicist. And she said that her patient, the doctors were talking about her patient. The patient was still awake. The patient stands up and says, wait a minute, I can hear you guys talking about me. I have had to go to, because I'm a nurse leader, but I had to actually go to HR with the physician in tow, saying we're not going to accept the behaviors that you have demonstrated towards the nurses.
Mm-hmm.
They will throw things at you in the OR. They will pick up something and throw it at a nurse.
Why?
And so they are upset. They are anxious. They don't know how to manage and control their behaviors.
But that's not because they're doctors. But that's a personal problem.
It is a personal.
No,
but they can
be
upset.
They could be throwing stuff at their wives at home, and that's not acceptable.
They could be, but if that case is not going the way that it needs to go, mm-hmm. and if they're not handed something as quickly as they would like that they didn't even ask for, then they get very upset. And so that some of what you see does exist, without a doubt. And I don't want to generalize,
right.
because it's not everyone. It's
Absolutely.
Just some. So, and it's only in some places. So we have to have a mindset that we do not tolerate those behaviors as nurses. And we do not. We're getting so much better, I think, at standing up to these kinds of behaviors and dispositions, and we're able to really mm-hmm. advocate for ourselves. And nurse leaders will certainly now go to bat for the nurse when those kinds of things exist. And so, and
absolutely.
That's absolutely necessary.
Mm-hmm.
It amazes me sometimes what we see. You know, we are, many times the patients will ask for the nurse over the physician
mm-hmm.
because we are the communicator, we're the educator, we're the informer. We're the ones, as I mentioned earlier, the coordinator of the care. And now we've gotten to a place in some hospitals where the physicians are thankful. The physicians will say, hey, the nurses are really just awesome. We really want to thank the nurses for what they do, because they realize that we have the power and we have the influence to really turn some of the outcomes of those patients. And so it is because of us. But there's still much work that needs to be done when it comes to the nurse-physician relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Much
work.
June, right? So what happens in June? All of the new residents come.
And who teaches them?
Nurses.
The nurses do.
Yes. And you know, Harold, for 20 seconds, what Eugenia alluded to with what our member said, shout out to Paula out there, was that person heard them speaking disparagingly about this.
Mm-hmm.
It was a gunshot victim, I believe, or a stabbing victim. And they're like, oh, here's another one.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
When that person was the innocent victim of what happened. And so things happen that most of the general public do not know. Like what you see in healthcare is not just ER, trauma in the ER, mm-hmm. or Grey's Anatomy. It is a lot of emotional toll that nurses in particular bear, as you asked me earlier about mental health. And so people need to understand that we absorb the trauma and the drama that we see in the healthcare settings every day. When that baby is lost, when that family member passes away, the traumas that Kenyatta sees every day that comes through the ER. I was an open heart cardiac ICU nurse, the people that did not make it. And so you absorb that, you smile, and then you go home to your families as if you did not see life and death literally every day. And so it's important to make sure that you understand that as a person who receives care. So you take the opportunity of nursing. There absolutely is a hierarchy in healthcare. And my best friend's an ER physician, but I will just simply say there is absolutely 150% a hierarchy in healthcare. So you take that physician first, the nurse just does what the doctor says. And then you add on to that colorism, racism. So imagine my white colleagues, and then on top of that, then you're a black nurse too.
Mm-hmm.
There's many times that people ask me, when they ask for the director or the leader, and I go into the room, I was looking for director. Well, that's me.
Yeah.
You know, there are surgeons, if they wear scrubs without the white coat, oh, I'm going to talk to the doctor. He will say, I am the doctor. You know, so for all of us in healthcare, it's an opportunity to realize, again, we're talented, we have expertise, we're smart, and we're brilliant, and we want to provide the same care for everyone. That's why representation matters when it comes to the black and brown healthcare providers, in this case, nurses.
You know, Kenyatta, I've been asked, particularly when I was a street reporter back in television, where we, you know, it was back in the news days where if it bleeds, it leads, and usually I was the one who would cover it. Back before police officers kept you blocks away from a homicide scene, you were sometimes close enough to smell the blood. And people would ask me, how do you deal with what you see when you would see this four times a week? But as a trauma nurse, you probably see these things hourly at times. How do you compartmentalize the trauma of being a trauma nurse?
Absolutely. So it's not just the gunshot wounds. It's what you see afterwards.
Yeah.
And it's the family. So one of the programs we run at Howard University Hospital, we have a slew of youth engagement programs for violence prevention. And we run one called Engage, where we bring our youth into the hospital and they do a simulated trauma. And they go through a day of lectures. And one of the things that our trauma medical director and I, when we are doing our lectures, we ask them, how many of you are victims of violence? Raise your hand. And how many hands goes up? It just breaks your heart. How many know someone?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Their hands go up, breaks your heart. Mm-hmm. And so we are trying to do a couple of things. One, the bedside nurse is absolutely trying to be competent at the bedside and give good care, but also give emotional support to the patient and to their family and friends, because they come with a whole lot of people, right? And so you're trying to manage the room, you're trying to manage the patient, and then afterwards, the nurse that gets that patient in the operating room is concerned about making sure that patient survives through that surgery. And then the patient that gets them in the SICU or surgical ICU is concerned with making sure not only is the patient continued to be taken care of, but the family. The family is the second patient. And so when you get a cycle like that day after day, and then we're not going to forget our med-surg nurses who at the end of the day have to take and make sure this patient gets good discharge home. One of the things that I try to encourage them to do is talk. Let's talk about what happened today. So we do good debriefs after these incidents. What happened? How are you feeling? When it's a 14-year-old, when it's a 15-year-old especially, if the patient dies, if the patient is, you know, does not die. So one of the things I like to do is debriefs. Another things I like to do is check-ins. We do monthly trauma nurse in the, we do monthly trauma checks. And so I'm always concerned about their emotional health. Mm. I don't want them to get compassion fatigue, where they see this over and over and they're like, okay, here's the next one, here's the next one. You know, to Meaty and Eugenia's point, you go home to your families and you want
it's
to
a heavy
be
weight.
Yes, you and especially when you have like an 8-year-old, like I have an 8-year-old, you know, I have a husband, we all have families, and you have to be energetic with them. You know, you have to give them attention.
The
right?
next dance recital,
exactly.
the next lacrosse game,
golf course,
the next basketball,
you know,
basketball game.
And you're
absolutely.
Like, I need to make sure also that my nurses are okay, because some of them aren't. Some That's of them right. are, but some of them aren't. And I don't want them to have unhealthy behaviors.
That's true.
Right? Because this can turn into, oh, let me take just a glass of wine. It's going to turn into 5 glasses.
Diversion.
Mm-hmm. Amen. Yes.
You don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And that was an interesting answer that you shared. Maybe I should have asked my question better. How do you manage it personally?
Well, you know, giving all honor and glory to God.
Amen.
What did you say?
Mercy.
That part.
So for me, or whoever you choose as your spiritual leader, for me it's God, or if you don't have a spiritual leader, meditation. My team actually purchased the Transcendental Meditation for me some time ago for Bosses Week. But meditation, prayer, going to my daughter, trying to make sure that I'm present for my daughter. That's important to me because at least I can take some joy out of that. And those things make me happy. So doing things that make me happy.
Find your joy.
Find joy is eating, cooking.
Yes.
there's that too. I only have a few minutes left, but I'll start with Meaty on this. And this is a much broader question for the rank and file. Outside of more money, outside of better hours, how do you think nurses can be best appreciated?
Great question. The measure of the society, Harold, is how they treat their old, their young, and their sick. And so I would say that if our institutions, our organizations, our government need more nurses at the bedside. Not at the bedside, at the table to have those conversations. Far too often, when you ask about appreciation, I don't need another ice cream cone. I don't need another t-shirt. I don't need another coffee mug.
Right.
I don't need another lunch bag. What I need is to really just be valued. And I think that most of my nursing colleagues would agree. I had an opportunity today, just 20 seconds, Harold, to speak at the correction facility here in D.C. There's about 50 nurses that work at the D.C. jail, and they said to me today that they don't feel valued. They don't feel appreciated. So even though Eugenia, myself, and Kenyatta have our experiences in a hospital setting, think about the nurses and healthcare providers that work in prisons and jails. So not only are they dealing with the same physical issues that we all take care of in acute care settings and post-acute care settings, they are physically getting, it took me, Harold, 20 minutes to get into place. I had to get pat down. All this stuff just to go to work. Mm-hmm. And so people, and I believe nurses, just want to be valued. And you have people in spaces and places that do not have the actual nurse at the table that are making decisions for us without our voice. And so we need to make sure, whatever that is, whether it's an organization, whether it's an organization, whether it's, you know, from a political perspective, making policy changes, we have to make sure that nurses are at the table to have that conversation. You can't tell me what a nurse needs if you don't have a nurse there. And far too often, that is what's happening.
What say you, Eugenia? Mm-hmm. How do you believe that nurses can be best appreciated?
Yeah, I think one is, uninterrupted time off. I know that sounds very basic, but honestly,
please say that again.
Yeah, but it really doesn't. That's a thing. But
yes,
please,
it
continue.
Is. Uninterrupted time off, because when they're off, as a nurse leader, everyone here, all three of us are leaders, but we call them and say, hey, can you come in? Do you have time for this? What happened here? What happened there? When you're off, you really do want to be off. It gives you the opportunity to really decompress and kind of reset. I think that's one way. And then the second thing is that, you know, and this is somewhat related, but when nurses leave the hospital, many times in their mind, they're still replaying what happened during the day. What could I have done better? Mm-hmm. What could I have done differently? And, you know, so they take all of that home. So somehow, you know, just to be able to leave the hospital behind when you are away from the hospital, I think that would help with the appreciation and also just help with, you know, some renewed energy the next time you are there. Yeah. And so, but yes, I think, and you know, it's okay. We have awards in hospitals like the DAISY Awards where patients can write about a nurse, write about that nurse. That nurse deserves to hear how he or she, and you know, did an extraordinary job during the day. So, you know, tell your nurse, if you are a patient, that they did an extraordinary job. Let them know they need that kind of feedback, because that's motivating, that's reassuring, you know, and so they need that as well. So talk to your patients, tell them directly that you really, talk to your nurses. As a patient, let them know that they are appreciated.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know if you're a patient, you're not feeling well, you're in pain, you're feeling sick, but be nice to your nurses.
Yes.
Because one of the things that I found out that they will...
Happy nurse, happy patient.
That's right. Can I get a real cup of coffee? Kenyatta Hazelwood, Meaty Bardinelli, and Dr. Eugenia Powell.
Yes.
Thank you all so much for coming.
It's our pleasure. Thank you so much for having us.
It's been amazing.
Yes.
Thank you for
that
having
is the
us.
Daily Drum for this Thursday, May 11th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.